So I've been a little ill this week, so I'm a little bit more scatterbrained than usual. So bear with me. So today we're going to talk about handling outliers, and this is, I think, going to lead pretty naturally into talking about Markov chain Monte Carlo. And going to, I guess, point out again that this material in particular follows really closely that archive paper on fitting a straight line. Yeah, so again, this is following that archive paper 1008846, and this is section 3. And it has a little bit more, sort of different explanations and also some exercises if you're looking for some, extra things to do to maybe build intuition or just practice more. Okay, so outliers. Experimental science just always encounters glitches and problems. I was at a telecon recently and they said, "The camera has some bugs, mostly moths." Oh, this is what experimental physics is like. So, this is life. And as when it comes to do data analysis, we have to deal with them. They're part of life. So different, options. And basically, you often the kind of the idea of an outlier is you don't know when you're taking your measurements that something has gone wrong with the apparatus. Maybe a power supply died, or maybe the telescope got knocked by something, or a micrometeorite hit something, or any number of things just happen. So how do they appear in the data set? We don't a priori know anything about whether they're good or bad. They're just part of the column of numbers. How do we deal with them? So one option would be, basically by hand, like make a plot, and if there's a nice relationship and then one is just way off, that's either the most interesting data point or the least interesting data point. And basically you make some judgment and say, this was, I think my cat bumped the laser or something. Don't know why there's a cat in the laser lab, but so by hand, this is a time-honored tradition. But as data sets get bigger and data analysis methods get more complicated, we'd like to do something a little bit nicer. We could come up with, basically some recipe or heuristic or algorithm. And there's in astronomy, there's one in particular called sigma clipping that's really popular, which basically says come up with somehow or another, come up with some initial fit, and then any data point that's more than, n sigma away from the line, drop it. And the main problem with this is that it, depending on your starting conditions, it will lead to different results. And it also doesn't optimize anything. Like it doesn't, there's not a single, you can't write down a thing that it is the best solution to. So it's kind of, it's sort of, it works okay, but it's not really defensible in some ways. And today we're going to take the like the statistics approach. And so in practice, what this is, whoops, that's not the right one. I want that one higher. Yeah. Okay, so far we've been doing generative models, right? We've been writing down a model for how our data were generated. We've been writing down something like yi came from some real xi with some relationship and some measurement noise. But now, and we're going to kind of continue living in this world of modeling what the data are, but now we want to also model how bad data get into our data set. So this is kind of like, it's a little bit awkward, but we are going to, like, we have to model how our data can be bad. It will end up being a little bit awkward, but also kind of not matter. So the way some common terminology around this is to say that individual data points can come from, a good, which we call foreground, or bad, which we call background distributions. And this is going to sound like kind of tiring and predictable, but for the backgrounds, we're going to use a Gaussian distribution. And we're going to fit for the parameters of that Gaussian. Now, this paper makes arguments that that's actually of, like, basically the most conservative thing you can do under certain conditions, but it also turns out to be, easy and straightforward. Okay, so there are sort of two ways of looking at this setup mathematically, and they're equivalent, and it'll take a little bit of apparent magic to get between them. But it's I think it is valuable to sort of have both of those ways of looking at it. So bear with me about the math. Okay, so the first way of looking at what we're going to do is this. So we have, say we have these, our n data points, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 data points here. We're going to just add 7 more parameters to our model. We already have 2 parameters in our model, right? The b and m, slope and offset of this line. We're just going to add 7 more parameters to our model. N new parameters. And they're going to be binaries. They're going to be either 0 or 1, 1 for each data point that says whether, so they're going to take the values 0 if data point I is bad, and 1 if data point I is good. You can tell that I'm a computer scientist and not a mathematician because I want to close the braces. Okay, so our good distribution is just like before. It's, and I'm going to call it P foreground. So this is like going to be the likelihood that a data point is drawn from the foreground distribution. This is what we were just calling the likelihood before, right? So this is going to be that yi is drawn from a Gaussian centered on mxi plus b with variance sigma I squared. And then, so this is the good distribution, and the bad distribution is I'm going to write as p background. And that's going to say that the data point is drawn from another Gaussian, and we're going to fit for its mean and variance. All right, I want that board to go up. Oh no, wait, I'm going to go over here first. Okay. So another thing is we've also picked up these two extra parameters that we have to fit for. So those are two more parameters in our model. All right, so now we can write this combo as the likelihood for an observation yi given all these parameters. So m and b from before, this whole, for yi, we only depend on that one qi. And we have big Y and big V. And I'm going to write it like this. So there's going to be a foreground likelihood that depends on M and B. And if it's a good data point, it has a value 1, so I'm going to raise it to the power qi. And then, pardon?
Nice trick.
Yeah, thanks. And then we're going to multiply that by the background distribution, yi. That one only depends on big Y and big V. I'm going to raise that to the power of 1 minus qi, right? So basically, qi is only taking these two values. So basically, either if qi was 1, then only this term comes into play. And if it's 0, only this term comes into play. So it's like, it's just a little, a nice little notation trick. So we could proceed with this. We could just go and try to fit for all of these 7 extra parameters for which data points are good and bad, plus the y and the v. We could do that. It would be a little bit of a pain to optimize that thing and to explore that parameter space. So I'm going to use a bit of a trick. And this is pretty, it's kind of cool the way it works out, I think. So what we're going to do is marginalize out these QIs, because really, we don't, at the end of the day, we don't really care about them very much. What we care about are the M's and the B's. The other parameters are all nuisance parameters. So we're allowed to, we still want to compute this thing. We're allowed to take that, add a term to the givens. No, I'm sorry. That's not what we want to. Yeah, we want to. Sorry. Okay. I'm going to marginalize out these guys. So if we're marginalizing them out, we have to take an integral over this thing as before. M, B, Q, I, Y, B. And then in order to do that, you have to have the prior and do that integral over Q, I. Now, it only takes two values, so it's not really an integral, right? It's just a sum over the two possible values. and this is the prior. And this says basically, before you saw any data points, what you thought the chances are that a data point is good. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. So this is probability that any QI is 1. Okay, so this integral becomes the sum. And instead of even writing out the sigma, I'm just going to write out the two terms in the sum. So we're going to have P, the likelihood, if QI is 0, so if it's bad, times this probability that QI is bad plus likelihood for that value if the data point is good, and the prior probability that QI is good. So yeah, okay, good. So, okay. Oh no, my pages are out of order.
How do you integrate over QI if it's a discrete variable?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you wanted to get technical, I guess you would do it with like delta functions. But it's basically just, I mean, in general, if you're marginalizing out any variable, you you do it with an integral in the prior. So but I guess for discrete variables, I could have instead just skipped to this, where I just write down, we're going to integrate it out. So then we do that by taking all of its possible values. Okay, good question. Okay, so we're nearly there, I promise. I'm gonna put that one up and write on the middle one. Robot boards. Okay, so I'm gonna call this thing P bad. So I guess that's the probability beforehand that any given data point is bad. and then this one ends up just being 1 minus P bad, because it's a distribution and it only has two values, so the two values have to sum to 1. Okay, so finally we get to a likelihood for this whole model. And now we've gotten rid of the QIs, but we've sort of picked up this P bad in exchange. So we traded 7 binaries for 1 scalar. That seems like a good trade. Okay, so now this is just P bad. That's just a scalar, right? Times this background likelihood. plus 1 minus P bad times the foreground distribution. And this is basically the other way of looking at this model. And this is usually called a mixture model formulation. Or also a foreground background model. So and I mean it's sort of cool that these two things are equivalent, right? They look quite different. Like originally we said, oh, we're gonna add a bunch of new variables that say whether each individual data point is good or not. And then we sort of like masked them away and turned it into this thing that looks like it's a blend or a combination of a bad distribution and a good distribution. So it's kind of weird. I'm gonna try to give you kind of a sense of why that works or what it looks like. So before, in our straight NOAP Lyra model, before we had a likelihood for y given an m and a b, and there was some true value of y, and the distribution looks like that. And in normal probability space, it looks like there's sort of nothing going on in the tails. They look like they're just flat. But remember, in log space, the probabilities out here change a lot, right? It's if you look in log space, this thing is quadratic around y true. So out here in log space, they're really changing rapidly. Like there's a huge difference between going from 10 sigma up to 9 sigma, like going from a point here on the distribution to here on the distribution, is a way huger change, way larger change than going from 2 sigma up to 1 sigma. And that's sort of why outliers are so damaging in fits, because so I'm going to actually just write that out and say, you know, going from 10 sigma to 9 sigma is a way bigger change in the chi-squared value, which is what the fits actually care about, right, than going from 2 sigma to 1 sigma. So that means that if you're going to, if you have, you know, say, three data points like that, like, if the fit goes like this, then this data point is way far away. So the fit is really doesn't like that. Reducing that chi-squared difference, or that difference in sigmas by one, is a huge benefit. So this data point pulls it down really out of proportion to just the pure like number counts. So, you know, basically, it'll do something. I don't know exactly. I should have computed a good example. But, you know, basically, like, one small data point or one data point that's an outlier can really throw off your entire fit. And that's basically because of this, that, you know, the change from 10 sigma to 9 sigma, you know, from chi-squared of 100 down to 81 is a way bigger change, like 9 units of chi-squared versus 2 sigma to 1 sigma, which is sort of like, you know, 1 unit of chi-squared difference or 3. Okay, so that was for our model without handling the outliers. So what the outlier model does is basically softens up those tails of the distributions. So you can think of this as there being the same y true as before. But then there's also this sort of broad p background. So this is the p foreground component, and that's the p background component. And and then the sum of those, or the weighted sum of those two, is our full model. And it basically just means that instead of the probabilities dropping off a cliff, they sort of level out and don't drop off quite as quickly because this distribution is much broader. So then it means that we make this change much smaller. So the model is sort of more willing to say, to let one data point just be an outlier, because it's, if you move the fit around, its probability doesn't change very much because it's in the tail of this broad distribution. And it's sort of more willing to trade off one bad point against a good point. Okay. So I think at this point, I'm going to we'll switch over to doing some lab stuff. So I prepared a notebook that has words and code, and then parts where you have to, where there's code missing and you have to add, you have to write stuff in. So this is on the course webpage. Actually, before I put down the projector, do people want to ask any questions about this? Yeah.
One more question. I still don't get what this big Y and big V are for the back.
Oh, yeah, okay. So they're going to be, so kind of the idea is that, let me redraw this picture. So we're going to have the same, going to have the same foreground distribution as before, centered around Y true. And then basically just because we need some distribution to draw them out of, we're going to invent a distribution that the bad points are drawn from. You could make this something different. You know, you could make it like a uniform box or whatever, but here we're just going to use Gaussians because it's sort of, and we're going to let the model try to find those values. It's going to be basically, there's going to be a distribution of the bad point that is also going to be a Gaussian. And the idea is that it's, this is the value big Y, and this is the value big V. Right, so they're going to be drawn from this like broad distribution. And we're just going to let the model fit that. And the idea is that if you had like, so if you have kind of this a set of data points, like I've been drawing, you know, whatever, with one down here and one up here, and maybe there's a bad one here. The idea we hope is that the true distribution will go through that, and then the broad distribution will basically be the right size to pick up these ones, to explain these ones well. And if we had like tons of outliers, or that it would sort of be, that it would be sort of like of sort of about that size-ish. You know? And if, you know, maybe we had, if we had like huge outliers that were like way off the scale, then that distribution would sort of grow to encompass that range. And so the nice thing is that if you're a huge outlier, then this term is going to be almost zero. Right? Like if you're like 100 sigma off of the main distribution, then this probability that you're drawn from the foreground is going to be almost zero. So you know, this one's going to totally dominate it. So you know, like when in that version of it, where you sort of switch between, if you're like a huge outlier or right on the main distribution, it sort of does that. Like it, sort of one of those terms is really dominant over the other. And if you're sort of out in the tails, then it sort of could be either, and they both contribute.
So we basically just take the bad points and fit a Gaussian to that one.
Yeah, that's effectively what the method's doing. Okay, good. Any other like comments or thoughts or questions? Hopefully you'll get to play with it a little bit in the lab and it'll maybe make a little bit more sense. I hit the button for the projector. I think it's going to come on. Oh, yeah, right. I guess I don't actually need the screen. So I uploaded this lab to the GitHub repository for the course, the 2018-computational-physics. And it's in the, I'll show it on. Dongle. And there's a data analysis module directory, and it's called lab2-scaffold. So I think if you just click on it in GitLab, in GitHub, it'll show it to you, but you won't be able to type into it. So you should try it, like, if you download that notebook and then load it up in your local notebook viewer, like in your local Jupyter installation, then you can actually, like, make changes to it.
How do we open it again?
Oh, there's my email. Whoops. Don't worry, nothing important happens.
How do we open those? I mean, if I've downloaded it, how do I open it again? I forgot.
Good question. Let's see if I know. Okay, let's go like that. Okay, so I want to go to there, go to the data analysis module, grab lab2-scaffold. So if you just click on it, it'll show it to you, but you can't type into the boxes, so it's no fun. You go raw to download it? Nope. I guess you can go raw and then save page as.
File.
Pardon?
I downloaded all of them as a zip file instead.
Oh.
So if I go to the GitHub page.
If you do a pull.
Yeah, you can also do a git pull if you have this repository checked out. Yeah, that's enough.
I just went to code and then as a clone or download the module and that's it.
Oh, yeah. Okay, anyway. So let's see. How do we. So we start it by going Jupyter-notebook. And that should open up the notebook, this kind of file browser view. And for me, my browser downloaded it to the Squiggle downloads directory. So if I copy it here, do it that way. Except I don't want to be running Jupyter in this directory. And then I guess once you've then from that Jupyter browser, you should be able to like find the file and open it. Oops. Is that working for everybody? Anybody?
A special program for that to open, or where do I open the program?
Oh yeah. Okay. So.
Last lecture somehow, but I forgot.
Yeah. So we, if you open a terminal or whatever program, and run Jupyter-notebook. This is from a like terminal or Windows command shell or whatever, then it should start up the Jupyter notebook server and take you to the web browser. Does that work? Okay. Everybody good, bad, confused, indifferent, happy? I did not get as much of the scaffolded notebook done as I wanted to, so I might actually kind of sneak off and continue working on the second part of it while you're working on the first part. But yeah, so basically, what I want to do in this is make that bigger. So we've basically given you a data set from that archive paper that, whoops, oh. I can't show you the plots because you have to add code before the plot will appear. Anyway, that it has some outliers in this data set. There's sort of a main set of points that look like they're on a relation, and then there's some outliers. And we'll first do the weighted least squares solution like we did before and find that that doesn't look good. And then we'll sort of work toward implementing this foreground background model and finding its parameters and figuring out how to like plot it. And we'll find that it's a little bit difficult to work with. And then that's going to lead into trying to use Markov chain Monte Carlo to solve it, or to like optimize and sample from that model. That's my hope, at least. Oh yeah, there's a plot of the data set and the least squares fit. Let's see how. So I realized that today was like the one day when I didn't actually write on the board the full expression for the Gaussian, and it's like the one day where you actually have to write it in code. So let me like slightly give you a break on that. So there's in the whatever the function is called, foreground, background, log likelihood, or whatever it's called, there's a place where you have to write PFG, P foreground, and P background. And, pardon? Yeah. Okay, right. So in math land, this is P of yi given m and b. And this is going to be P of yi given y and v. And in Jupiter land, these are going to be, I'm going to do this sort of approximately. It helps to put an at dot in front of it because we're operating on vectors. And so this is square root of 2 pi sigma x minus a half y minus mx plus b squared over sigma I squared. And to make things, to add another point of difficulty, that's a variance. So
I initially did, like last week, we did some
go like that. Actually, that's close enough. That hopefully is enough to help a little bit.
But if the build doesn't work.